Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, welcome everyone. This is the Media Project. It's your chance for some commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, maybe even a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. As you can hear, I'm not Rex Smith. This is Rosemary Armijo.
What? You're not Rex?
I'm not. It's true. I'm an investigative editor and a professor at UAlbany. I'm filling in for Rex today. And joining with me, two distinguished guests. We have political scientist, publisher, professor, and WAMC's grand poobah, as he has described, Alan Chartok.
Hello.
Hello. And Poughkeepsie executive editor Stu Shinsky is back with us this week. Welcome.
Guess yes, but distinguished. I'll even reserve judgment
on
that.
We'll have to prove that.
Well, Rosemary, when you were giving your bona fides, as they say, you forgot to tell them that you're the chairman.
It's director of the program.
Director of the journalism program.
Journalism program at UAlbany. Yes, it's a job that my colleagues, more suited to the job, said, no, you take it. I'd rather poke my eyes out with glass than have this. No.
Still distinguished, though. Still by distinguished.
By the way, that was always my feeling.
Yeah, you don't get to teach as much. You're doing,
they may give you a couple of hundred bucks more, but it ain't worth it.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, I do have this lovely title. So I want to start today with the New York Times, which surprised its subscribers by sending out this past weekend, along with the Sunday paper, a little box, a cardboard box. And it turned out to be, if you folded it and bent it correctly, a pair of 3D glasses.
Oh.
And they have debuted a story called Deported. But it's the first newspaper story that's told in the round, if you will. It's virtual reality. Have you had a chance to look at it? And what do you think, Stu?
I did look at it. I will correct you. It's not the first. I am proud to say my company, the Gannett Company, did this at the Des Moines Register last year, project on farming. They basically did a day in the life of a farm trying to survive in the Midwest. And they did exactly what the Times did here with numerous cameras and set up a virtual 3D experience to take you through the farm. And it was fascinating.
So
I did see it.
They're showing, is it a video? I mean, what is it exactly?
It is a virtual reality video where you, in essence, are, in the Gannett example at the Des Moines Register, you're put in this farm. You're put literally in the middle of this farm via virtual reality, and you can walk, and you can go through the different parts of the farm. And this seems to be the same technique that the Times is using in this project as well, where it takes the reader not just telling them the story, but it puts them in the story.
Cool.
In order to view it, you have to download an application onto your phone.
Right.
And then you call up the story in this application, and it's enhanced. You don't need it, but it's enhanced if you put on the 3D glasses.
Does it cost?
No, they're passing it out free at this point. I don't know if it will. It certainly is very costly to produce this. I was unaware of the Des Moines one. I need to look that up. I'm having some students look at this.
I was down at the Gannett headquarters in Virginia last year. I saw the project being built. I saw it unfold. Absolutely fascinating. And the thing about it is that newspapers and 3D, well, yeah, because it's innovation. And newspapers have to innovate. And eventually, they have to find new ways to tell stories. And with the gaming generation out there, where they love video games and all of that, this ties right into the same type of experience.
It is video game technology applied to news. It's the same idea that if you tell news with comedy, as Jon Stewart pioneered, you get younger viewers and readers. I misspoke, by the way, Alan, if I can add this.
Sure.
I said it was the deported. I'm thinking of refugees. It's actually the displaced.
Okay, so this is one more example of what we have always known here at public radio, which is convergence. You know, as the New York Times goes into what might have been 3D movies or 3D television, And as we set up websites with all our stories, and when we do anything live here now, you can stream it, video stream it. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, it's all sort of coming together to the center.
Yeah, and some people resist it. My sister, who was an editorial writer at the Washington Post, no stranger to news, sent out a Facebook post on Sunday saying, what is this box that came with my New York Times? Why won't they let me just read my news? Well, so there is some of that.
Think of it when you go into the movies and you want to see a 3D movie and they give you these funky glasses to watch through them. It's the same thing.
Same idea.
Yeah, the question is, will this keep readers for longer? Will they be interested? Or, frankly, will it be a fad? So, and honestly, can they make money off of this? Is there a monetary opportunity here?
So if you're young Sulzberger at the New York Times, maybe not so young anymore, but young Sulzberger, you are thinking all the time, how do I make a difference so that we bring people who we don't have back into the fold?
Exactly. Well, I want to move, keeping on the theme of young people, I want to move from New York to Missouri, to Columbia, Missouri, where protests broke out at the University of Missouri campus. And the protests were against what many students and ex-faculty and alum regard as institutionalized racism on that campus. There was a diversion because a young student journalist, a photographer, wanted to take pictures of the tents set up by students in the middle of the quad. Let me repeat, that's a public space on a public university. Student photographer who is of himself Asian descent, he was not white. He wanted to take pictures of this, and he was stopped first by a barricade of soldiers, black protesters, and then by two white women. One was a staffer for the university, and the other was Melissa Click, who has gotten a lot of attention, lots of clicks on her name, Click, because she put her hands in front of the camera and physically barred the young man from taking his photos and said at one point, can I get some muscle over here to move him?
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. Scary. There was a huge reaction to this. She has,
and she's a professor, like you.
No, not like me. She's not tenured. She's an assistant professor in the communications
department. That's also a dangerous thing to be an assistant professor, because for those who are listening who don't know what it's like to operate in a university without tenure, you have to watch every step you make. Otherwise, goodbye.
And she has not brought pride to the school, a lot of attention. On the other hand, many people say that the media should take this as a lesson. We've done several things wrong. One is we're not respecting the views of black students who don't see the press covering them sympathetically or even with any kind of great knowledge and intent. And so they had reason to want to keep us away. And number two is, as journalists, we took the attention away from institutional racism. Here we are talking about the First Amendment instead of about racism. What do you think?
I think there's two stories. What you said, and also this professor's or assistant professor or adjunct professor, her conduct. I mean, she's a communications professor.
Can you imagine?
She's teaching this. She has.
And she has honorary status in the journalism program.
Exactly.
They were
right.
About to revoke that from the journalism school, which is separate. Maybe you can explain the difference between communication and journalism in an academic setting, Ellen. I don't think it's quite as distinct.
Well, it depends where you are.
Right.
When I was in your department at SUNY, journalism was the stepchild, sort of part of the old English department model. Now it's all coming together, and communications and journalism are basically one. But we had a guy in our department who didn't like the applied aspect of communication. So he insisted that we were the Department of Communications, which would have implied, of course, that communications was cerebral as opposed to communication, which is applied.
Right.
Are you following this at all?
Yes.
It was pretty funny.
It's pretty arcane.
And he wanted the departmental stationery to say the department with an S.
Jeez. Well, in Missouri, both the journalism school, which is separate and distinct, and the communication department came out with a statement saying, we love the First Amendment. We're all for journalists. And then Ms. Click resigned her courtesy appointment in journalism. And
right, but
apparently she's getting a talking to from the chair.
Well, you don't fire in the middle of the semester. You just don't give tenure. If that's what's going to happen, I can't say because I'm not there.
Yeah.
And she did apologize.
She, all over the place.
Left and right. She apologized. I mean, what it comes down to here is she has to straddle the line of ethics.
Yeah.
She can be there, but in my opinion, as someone who is supposed to be advocating journalism and communications, there's far better ways to handle this. She can basically help students understand what is the point, what's going on here, guide journalists to do things responsibly. But in this case, the journalists who were here, the students, They didn't do anything wrong that I saw.
So what were they? No. What was her motive?
She was protecting the protesters, she thought, against the incursions by the media.
She was protecting the protest. Well, that's something she could say. Mario Cuomo used to talk about post hoc propter hoc. After you do something, mm-hmm. you know, wrong, you try to figure out a rationale. But another potential rationale is she's trying to become tenured. And she thought she was protecting the university.
This is not how to do it.
Yeah, it isn't. The hero of the whole thing, I think, is Tim Tai, the Asian photojournalist who stood there. If you've seen the video, it's worth looking at, patiently explaining to both the screaming women and the students who were wrong in trying to stop him, but at least they were polite and they were not physical as she was. He's explaining to them, no, the First Amendment gives you the right to assemble and it gives us the right to a free press, too. We both have a stake in this. Yeah. He was terrific in this.
I love the whole concept of can we get some muscle over here?
Get some muscle over
is
here,
is that
yeah.
good or what?
It sounded
like
something out of like a gang movie. What happened here is Professor Click, she took the awareness away from what the story really was, which was the protest, which I'm sure maybe was not her intention, but that's the practical implications of what really happened here.
Do we know anything about her particular history? Was she
She's never actually taught a journalism class, although she sat on the committee.
But was she a journalist herself?
No, she was not a journalist herself, and her research is on to things like the impact of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought maybe she was a photographer.
No, not.
Because of her name. Click.
One of my students assigned to take a look at this whole conflict said, gee, even her name sounds artificial, sounds fake. Well, we also have a lot of news this week on politics, media and the politics, including the debate this week.
There was a debate?
There was another debate.
There's like one every 3 days.
There's millions of them. I want to talk for a minute, if you don't mind, about Ben Carson, who got some unwelcome press attention about his past. And some of the stories he's told and written about his youth turned out not to be exactly as portrayed. And the media has been stalking them. His response has been that the media is out to get him. And by the way, thank you. Because of your biased coverage, I raised $3.5 million this week.
Because people hate the press. That's what he's saying.
Right.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting concept. Let's say a guy says, somebody comes up to me and says, Alan, you know, I could get you into West Point. Somebody with clout, maybe one of the congressmen I knew when I was a young person. I can get you into West Point. I have a vacant thing or whatever. And you say, no, thank you. Could that morph later on into, I was offered an appointment into West Point.
I was offered a free appointment as if any carried
Well,
money.
It's also true that it's free. So therefore, if you got an appointment, it was free.
It would be free.
So he was saying foul ball, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, frankly, speaking for him, and I don't like him that much, I can tell you, I suspect he's handled it about as well as he could have handled it. I think he gets away with it scot-free.
Well, he gets away with it with $3.5 million in fundraising.
Well, forget about the money, which is also true. But since the American people don't like journalists, they don't like anybody, they don't like congressmen, they don't like state legislators, they don't like journalists, you know, it is understandable to me that he has harnessed that antipathy to help himself.
To help himself. Do you think there was really a witch hunt against him? Is looking into the past minutely of the leading candidate for the Republican nomination, is that a witch hunt or is that responsible journalism?
Well, but based on your very good question, we are led to answer you, of course. You know, it's what the press should be doing. On the other hand, have I ever known a newspaper, even a big newspaper, big newspaper, who has what we call an S list in the building, in the business, where certain people are persona non grata? You know, yes, I have known that too. So are newspapers and newspaper editors capable of you know, singling somebody out for retributive or for either good or bad reasons?
It worries me that for the sake of being better liked by the public, journalists are being asked to do things that we traditionally have done. One is this, vetting the background of candidates. Another is naming the mass killer, suspects in mass killings.
Sure.
Now we're not supposed to do that, many people would say, according to a new movement led by law enforcement that glorifies the bad guys.
Well, you know, I'm watching a particular trial in New York, which is the trial of ex-Speaker Sheldon Silver, who is being ripped apart by testimony. And by the way, I happen to be a big believer in Preet Bharara, the man who's bringing all of these charges. However, what's happening at this trial is, as we hear one witness after another, we're learning how disgusting and dirty the state legislature is, something I've always known. Nevertheless, we're learning how it works. We're learning about the iron law of oligarchy. We're learning about the fact that one guy, even though there are a lot of people, one guy makes the crucial decisions. And we're learning about how they make money by referring, how this guy allegedly made money by referring people to his law firm and using his clout to do that. Nevertheless, would anybody in the world like to be on and everything they ever did that they may not be in love with might not be
on the line?
I mean,
well, in this case with Carson, what they found was true. West Point was an exaggeration, an embellishment. With Silver, was it legal or not? And yeah, that's what watchdog journalism, investigative journalism is one of the things that can separate, I think, a good news organization from a run-of-the-mill news organization, because they will provide unique context, unique content, unique opportunities to really get inside of the stories here. So in Carson's case, you know what? Maybe you should just be honest up front to begin with.
No, I agree with you. On the other hand, I can understand. You always have to put yourself in everybody else's shoes, and I can understand how the people feel about the press.
Mm-hmm.
They just think, as I have often told the story about being before a service organization, and they were wondering why Papa Cuomo was so tough on the press. And Mario Cuomo was so tough on the press. And I said, okay, so anybody in the room, raise your hand if you've ever been the subject. It was a very prestigious organization. I've just been the subject of a story. And everybody raised their hands. I said, okay, take them down if you were satisfied.
Yeah, exactly.
No hand went down.
Yeah, if you're closely involved in a story, then you know that no one else can get it right the way you can. But, you know, some new studies out of a number of universities are upholding at least one reason that Republicans and conservatives maybe ought to be concerned about bias in the press. These studies show that journalists overwhelmingly identify as Democrat rather than Republican.
That's always been the case.
It's increasing, though.
Yeah.
And now it's a mere 7% of journalists identify as Republicans now. And when they do give money to political campaigns, they usually donate to Democrats. Fewer journalists are identifying at all by either party now. That is true. But
sure,
the concentration is self-proclaimed Democratic journalists to Republican, 4-1. Does that mean we can't really cover Republicans and conservatives carefully and fairly?
Well, we've always argued this. We've always argued that it may be true that the men and women who are writing the stories are Democrats. The publishers are quite often Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to see some sort of breakdown within journalism of this statistic. For instance, television versus print media versus online media. When the first presidential debate was held on Fox, one of the first comments that came out was that a lot of people were impressed that tough questions were asked by the Fox moderators
right.
of the GOP candidates.
True.
So, yes, these statistics are probably true, and I think it's somewhat fair to say in my anecdotal experience that maybe a lot of journalists do have Democratic leanings. Does that mean they are not objective? That's different. That's a whole different question.
Tim Grossclose, who wrote a book called Left Turn, How the Liberal Media Bias Distorts the American Mind, has this wonderful quote I want to have you react to. He said, there's something in the DNA of liberals that makes them want to go into jobs like the arts, journalism, and academia more so than conservatives. Even if you're just trying to maximize profits by offering an alternative point of view, it's hard to find conservative reporters. So it's natural that the media is more liberal. Both of you run news organizations. Have you had a hard time bringing in conservatives to balance things?
Well, I've never particularly looked for whether somebody's
exactly.
a liberal or
we don't interview for political banner.
It's hard enough to get people who can do the job well.
Yeah.
And that's what you try to get. That may seem evasive. By the way, while you're giving out very good literary advice, I want everybody to go into their libraries and look up a book by Delmer C. Dunn called Public Officials and the Press, in which he does a magnificent job. This is from the 60s or 70s, in which he does a magnificent job of surveying all of the reporters and asking them about these very questions. So it might be Public Officials and the Press by Del Dunn.
Interesting.
It's a great stocking stuffer, folks, as the holidays approach.
I want that, Mom. You're listening? Okay, more on political news. We had Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live. That's getting a little bit old, but we've not reacted to it on the media project.
I think one of the largest audiences they have ever had.
Indeed.
In
there hasn't been an audience this large
and
since
NBC
2012.
NBC made a fortune.
NBC made a fortune. The critics hated it.
Yes.
It got panned. Did you think it was funny?
NBC made a fortune.
I think it goes right back to your previous question, Rosemary. I think that the bent of the people who put that program out is basically left of center. So all of a sudden you're having this guy come on there, and they have to provide some solace for the people who are watching, who say, well, this isn't my Saturday Night Live. They're not being left-wing enough. And you have Larry David on the side being paid $5,000 to yell at the top of his voice, you're a racist.
You're a racist, Mr. Trump. Yeah.
Well, don't forget when Bill Clinton went on Saturday Night Live years and years ago, it made his campaign in many ways because it humanized him. And in this case, if you're NBC, you want ratings. Trump is the attention getter of all attention getters in the presidential campaign right now, particularly on the GOP side. You bring him on, you're going to get ratings, you make money.
Which is interesting because in the last debate, which Rosemary just referenced, I thought it was one of the more boring of the debates. And that's because Trump has a new philosophy, which is, I don't want to be a clown. I want to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. So he's damped it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it wasn't as much fun as it was in the past.
As pyrotechnic as he has been, has he? But listen to us. You know, we're saying, well, we make money and people like it. So we're going to put it on. No wonder in polls we come out so badly with the public.
And that's the same NBC which severed its connection with Trump, theoretically, at one point because of the Hispanic issues.
Mexicans,
until they realize they can make money.
Well, one other story about, we're running out of time, so I want to send you're listening
like
to the
that.
Media Project.
Let's make it an hour.
The New Yorker came out with a story talking about how the media has become so reliant on polling. It's a prisoner of polling, and it feels frantic, sales-driven, and anti-democratic. Alan, this is a discussion we have had many times about whether or not we should be reporting on polls. Certainly we should watch them, but should we be reporting on them as if they're big, major news?
Well, as P.T. Barnum might have said, give them what they want. And they want it. I mean, just like they want Trump, they want the polls.
For that
and they want to see where the race is right now. And it's a way of taking a snapshot in time, as we often say, and saying, okay, Trump is ahead, Carson's ahead by 2 points, Carson's behind by 2 points. Everybody likes that stuff. In so many ways, it is scientific, and I'll get mail on that.
However, the New Yorker points out that polls are frequently, in fact, more so than not, incorrect or wrong. They're misleading in some way. The decline of landlines and legal curbs about cell phone surveys. Internet polling is failing. So you're getting more mistakes than the most recent one. And we talked about this on the roundtable, I think, was that in Israel, Netanyahu was supposed to lose or at least be in a really close election in Israel, and he won handily.
Well, as I often say, Rosemary, there are many things that you don't tell your pollster. You don't tell your mother. You don't tell your pollster. For example, if you're a racist, are you going to tell your pollster, yeah, I'm voting for David Duke? You know, I don't think you do that. And therefore, that is another thing that's wrong with contemporary polling.
One of the most respected polling institutes is based in Dutchess County near Poughkeepsie, New York, where we are, the Marist Institute of Public Opinion, run by Lee Meringoff. And this is a poll that, yes, as Alan said, it records a moment in time. But my understanding is they have morphed into these other ways to reach
questions. So, for example, they can randomly dial cell phones and ask information when they do that, and they're doing more and more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it may come down to not necessarily polls in general, but the individual poll, and can you trust that poll? And if you're a reader, what does a poll mean to you? Do you look at one poll over time and measure changes in it? What does it really mean to you? And for different people, it has different value.
Mm-hmm. Well, Trump is certainly a creature of polls, I think. He's come out. All right, quickly, one last story we can cram in here. Rolling Stone magazine, which famously a year ago, last November, ran a story about a rape at the University of Virginia campus that never happened. The story's now been debunked and basically ridiculed nationally as a failed piece of journalism. It's now facing 3 lawsuits stemming from that story.
And what took so long?
To get the lawsuits going?
Yeah,
Sue's right. We knew from the moment, and you did too, Rosemary.
Yeah,
you said
I
it many times,
it.
That this is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
However, if you have 3 lawsuits and they're half-date, they're big lawsuits, this could ruin Rolling Stone. Does the publishing of one terrible story, but one wrong story, warrant shutting down what could amount to shutting down Rolling Stone?
Well, that's why you have to be very careful.
It was shoddy journalism, and the Ombudsman report that was done out of Columbia University basically said, look, there were some basics here just not done, and that was a problem.
Yeah, that was an unprecedented sort of correction, too. No one's been fired from Rolling Stone, however. The magazine itself could come down. But
a few people did leave.
Yeah, one of the editors left of his own accord.
And, of course, if you're running a big organization and they're facing a lawsuit, do you really want the people who were there dissatisfied and out of there throwing stones at you also?
Okay, that's about it. We've run out of time. Thank you for listening to the Media Project.
And thank you for doing this, Rosemary.
No problem.
Circulation, ting-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.